Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Roger Badish up in the newsroom. Jess Rains behind the glass. I didn't get a chance to chat with Patty and the gang, so I miss them. Maybe they'll swing by on their way out the door. I don't know. But I wanted to ask them, Roger, so I'll ask you instead.
Oh, okay.
Was President Trump happier yesterday that another affair was detailed and alleged on the day that Robert Mueller indicted 13 people? Or was President Trump happy that Robert Mueller indicted 13 people on a day that another woman came forward and detailed an allegation of an affair?
Ooh, good question.
My guess is he was happier about the Mueller thing because he believes this was complete vindication and shows there was no collusion. And if that tweet hasn't come out yet, it is coming within a few hours.
I think there was something already about that.
Did he already tweet that?
I think he did several hours ago that he
complete
was happy.
Vindication. Yeah. No collusion. Now, here's the trick, though, for President Trump, is that he has said all along the Russians didn't interfere. This is fake news. It didn't happen. So he's got a choice to make here. He can run with, hey, they said unwitting. None of us knew what was going on. This wasn't us. This is blah, 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 blah. But in doing so, he might have to admit, oh, yeah, but I guess there was some you know, meddling. Because so far, you know, he just hasn't believed that's true at all. There's no meddling. There was no influence. There was no anything. This indictment clearly says there was a lot of meddling, pro-Trump meddling. Once, you know, it was funny because it took him a while to get there. But eventually they said, we definitely don't want Hillary and let's go with Trump. And so there was meddling, according to Mueller's indictments. But it said so far, it said unwitting. If there was working with any Trump, it was unwitting. They didn't realize, they didn't know, whatever.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that there isn't more down the road, right? It doesn't mean this investigation's over.
Investigation's continuing, sure.
Well, what I'm saying is it doesn't necessarily mean there won't be any collusion alleged or indicted for down the road.
Yeah, nobody knows what's going to happen.
But Ari Fleischer, who used to be the press secretary for George W., right?
Oh, wow. I'm not sure which one.
But he was the press secretary, right?
Yeah.
Was that
Ari's job? Ari Fleischer.
I think it was for George W. He said in a tweet, and I don't know what kind of expert he is on this or not, however.
Well, he's worked at the White House.
He certainly did, but I don't know how much he worked on investigations like this or what his breadth of knowledge is and what happens. But he said that the good news for the president is, and this is actually what he tweeted, that the good news for the president is nobody from the White House, nobody from his inner circle is indicted in this. And Ari believed that if that was coming, it would have come now. He said the bad news is now the president's kind of forced to just go ahead and admit that the Russians did meddle in the election. But other people are saying it doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't collusion coming down the road. So I don't know. I don't know. If I were the president, I'd be yelling and screaming from the top of the building. Hey, unwitting, although that doesn't make us look good. Unwitting. We didn't know. We weren't part of this. This isn't us. But then he's got to go, but I guess the Russians aren't such good guys after all, right? I mean, he kind of doesn't have to say that.
He's not saying that.
He's not, but is he going to, I mean, is he just going to just ignore that whole part where there's all these allegations?
He can.
I mean, it's either fake news or it's not. So if he's going to, promote, hey, look, no collusion, it's been proven. Well, if he is actually proving things, then you have to accept that he proved that the Russians were meddling in our election.
No, he's saying that it proves he had nothing to do with any meddling.
Okay, but if that was proven, then also proven was that there was meddling
but
by the Russians.
But that's not what he's talking about. He's not bringing that up.
So you think he's just going to just quietly ignore that part of it?
I think that President Trump says what he wants to believe, and that's what's going to come from the White
House. Anybody that's out there, Patty, if there's the custodians, bring him in. Patty's show is swinging by for a goodbye.
I see that.
It's like I should have cocktails for you guys for your way out the door or something each week.
I heard there were cocktails.
Oh, I'm sorry, Elliot. Patty lied to you just to get you in here. Have a seat. Have a seat, everybody.
Well, we had free gum up here. But
was there free gum?
Gum.
Wow.
Sugarless.
Was that to make up for the parking spots?
No, I ran into that problem, too. Thank you.
You are in the wrong spot, by the way. I almost told
I know.
You myself.
I know.
I think you
I never
the
got
next
the email.
Oh, don't start with the I didn't get the email.
I didn't.
That is no excuse.
No. What? And there's a sign out there that says what spot to park in?
No, there's an email that tells you what spot to park
in. But I never got the email.
Well. That might work tonight, but I wouldn't pull that one next week.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I got a good spot.
Yeah, you did. But I parked so close you're not going to be able to get back in.
Uh-oh.
I blocked you in.
Okay.
No, I parked where I'm supposed to.
I now have a copy, or at least a portion of the email that says what spots I need to be in. I will.
Okay. All right. Well, you better adhere. You better start adhering to what's going on.
I almost got angry when the thing wouldn't go up.
Oh, because you tried to use your
I used it 10 times. Yeah. I'm like, and then they want to know, who are you?
That doesn't work anymore. That doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So Patty's Roundtable has just joined us. Elliot, Ken, everybody is down here. Patty's trying to find microphones and everything for everybody to jump in. So guys, real quick, and I know you guys want to get going because you probably headed to a bar or something.
Bagels.
Bagels?
No, I'm just concerned that my car is still there because we didn't park in the lot tonight. We parked in an undisclosed location.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Lower Wacker where they're drag racing?
Yeah.
Lower Wacker. Yes, you are a pylon right now. They're jumping your car.
I hope not. It's actually closer than the lot. So when it's cold.
We're across the street.
Oh, yeah. You're right down here like in the Billy Goat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, you're probably fine.
But let's just hope that the car's still there with all the carjackings. And I kind of am serious when I say that.
Are they happening right here?
They're all over. All everywhere.
All right. So the question I put to Roger real quick, I want to run by you guys. Was the president happier today that Mueller indicted people on Friday? Mueller indicted people on the same day that a playmate came out and said, yeah, we had an affair too. Or was he happier that a playmate came out on the same day that Mueller came out and indicted people?
I don't think it's going to matter to Melania. She will be able to see the playmate story while the Mueller indictment came out.
Well, it doesn't matter to Melania, but the president.
Well,
what was he happier to see?
I think no matter when the Karen McDougal story came out, mm-hmm. Melania, if you noticed, tonight arrived separately from the president.
I didn't notice that.
Yes, she's the distance is already forming.
Yeah. Well, it's been
she did not take the helicopter. She took a limo. I mean, she's
where did they appear at?
Down in Florida today. They traveled to meet the kids at the high school.
And they traveled there separately?
No, they traveled to Air Force One separately. Normally, you'd leave the White House, you'd get in the helicopter, and you'd go.
Yeah.
She did not do that. She took her own transportation.
Hold on. There you go, sir.
She was in a car to Andrews.
She took her own car. Yeah, her own driver, her own car.
Not like just one car, though.
I'm sure
it's whatever the
motorcade others.
Was. They have a full motorcade. Yeah.
But this whole thing about Karen McDougal underscores Trump's vulnerability to blackmail. How many women does he have like this, who he's paid off, or who friends have in some way, shape, or form helped bury around the world?
But for
and David Packer is a friend of his, the head of AMI, the American media.
Who's buying
so he bought
the
story and then killed it.
Right.
But what if this was done in Russia? And they did it with another story, and they're dangling it over his head. That's one of the concerns.
It said he was carrying on multiple affairs simultaneously.
Yes.
And he's probably not the first president or wealthy person to do that.
Oh gosh,
but it's a different day and time. It's a different day and time.
I think you know what though. I give Melania a lot of respect. She was ticked off and made it clear that in a very classy way, made it clear that she was ticked off. It wasn't like Hillary and Bill. If you remember, they walked to the helicopter
with Chelsea.
She wouldn't grab his hand. She was just
they put Chelsea in between them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't do that. She just didn't do it. She didn't.
We're really going to give. We're not giving Hillary a hard time, though.
No,
with Chelsea.
No, I'm not going to give Hillary a hard time. But Melania, I thought, handled it very well. And here she is tonight now, also starting. I think you're going to start to see after this trip. If she hadn't committed the trip, I wonder if she. And if it wasn't for.
If it wasn't for what the trip was.
I wonder if she even would go.
She didn't go to Davos, after all. And she pulled out of that last second.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think I'd want to be in the Trump household in the living quarters for a while.
So it's going to be bad, but there are going to be no indictments out of that one.
No, there aren't. But I was just making a joke, but basically the story gets changed. Are people paying more attention to this or that? Now, here's the interesting thing with the lady, Karen McDougal, is that her name?
Yeah, Karen McDougal.
So she's all like, we talked for a couple of days, and then it was on. And she seems like she was very happy and consensually willing. It wasn't like I was being paid or, he arranged this with a friend. She was really into it, right?
Yes.
And I kept thinking to myself, God, this is how Trump kills himself with one of these things, is because somebody comes out and alleges this, which they deny, they deny, they deny. But somebody comes out and says, and it was awesome. And his hands are big, and he's so brilliant, and in the way he talks, and let me tell you, it was the best sex of my life. He would trip up and go, that's right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see him
that's
going,
how, that's ego. How you get him.
I'm not saying it happened, but that girl knows what she's talking about, or something like that. He would totally, that's how he would trip himself.
Yes. Well, it's how actually a lot of guys would trip themselves, I think.
I don't know. I'd like to think that most people that are doing that would be, you know, you get to that level, you think there's a certain, but he seems like he could be coerced into agreeing to things or admitting things by flattering him.
Well, Matt, you know, it really gets tiring when you keep hearing it's the best sex ever. I'm just saying.
Well, and my issue with this is people conflate this with the Me Too movement, and it's not. This is a guy just having an affair, and it was a consensual affair.
This one.
This was not sexual harassment or sexual abuse.
There are separate allegations against him on a lot of that.
Different. Yeah, that's different.
I almost think he likes having some of this out there, whether it's with Stormy, whether it's with this most recent one, because it goes to his ego, and it strokes his mind.
Well, it goes to his virility.
Well, this one very much, I think. He likes because she's very pro. It was consensual. It was great. And the conversation. And I think the Stormy one, I think what he doesn't like is the idea of people paying anybody for anything, because I would never have to
offered,
do that.
Kieran McDougal said that there was a time during their relationship where he wanted to pay her.
And she was offended. After, yeah.
But she said, no. She goes, I'm with you because I'm with you, because I like you. I'm not doing this for money.
Right.
She was offended.
So you got to wonder about her.
That's interesting.
Look, I'm the only one in this room that has spent time with Donald Trump. And I'm telling you, the guy is charming as hell. I liked him. One-on-one, I thought he was funny as hell.
Now I'm wondering about you.
Obviously, before
we all knew him like we know him now, and he was just a celebrity and a tycoon, and correct. He has to be charismatic. He's got to have something about him.
I couldn't meet him now because I couldn't suspend disbelief. Sure. But back then, he was just, you know, Donald Trump. With hair, and he was funny. It's just very charming, charismatic. His jokes were funny. He's just a funny guy. I have to say, I really enjoyed it.
Which is really weird because he has no sense of humor now whatsoever.
No, he's changed. He has changed. I'm really shocked by how he's changed.
Now, hold on. I'm sure he has a sense of humor, but everything is pointed at him right now. And I doubt we have ever seen him have a sense of humor about himself. Has there ever been a time in history that he used to take a joke about himself or let somebody really make fun of his hair or anything like that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. But I mean, in his entire time in public life since he's been running for president, you have never seen him laugh. You have never seen him make a joke.
I've seen him make jokes.
He made jokes. Not since he's been running for president. He makes jokes at other people's expense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the only jokes he's ever made. You think he told knock-knock like jokes back in the day?
Right. He goes, should we say it? Yeah, okay. I guess you can say that they're treason. They're traitors. They committed treason. You know, they're talking about the congressman.
It was a joke.
He was goofing around. He was riffing.
But I think he's told plenty of jokes at other people's expenses at the rallies and things like that. He's made fun of people. Look at how he made fun of the disabled reporter.
Right.
I mean, that's Donald Trump's type of humor.
Type of jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fair.
All right. One other thing then. Yeah. The lawyer Cohen.
Yeah.
Admitting that he made this payment to Stormy Daniels. He never got reimbursed. It wasn't from this.
No, he didn't say that. He said he never got reimbursed by the Trump campaign.
Okay.
Or the Trump organization.
Yeah. He didn't say he didn't get reimbursed. He could have been reimbursed by Donald Trump directly. Or Ken has a great theory, which I think is really what
I think at the time the $130,000 was fronted. And I bet this wasn't the first time that he did it, by the way. There was a lot of familiarity here.
Yes.
There were just a couple weeks before the election, and I think there was kind of a tacit understanding. Because it's happened, my guess is, before. He'd been Trump's lawyer for 10 years. He was just down the hall from Trump's main office.
This is how we do it.
So there's a close relationship that it would be handled, but we're going to deal with it after the election.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
And then Trump wins. So what does Trump get access to? What large amount of funds that are unaudited?
$107 million.
In what?
The inauguration fund. That's where I think he paid him from. Because you don't have to report where those expenditures go to anybody, not even the IRS. They had a congressman on yesterday actually talking about this. And they asked questions about the inauguration fund. They didn't say what I said. It was just something else because he had filed, I guess, there was a filing made about the fund, inaugural fund. And she said, yeah, you know, we should do something about the inaugural fund because it's really just a giant gob of money. And he could do whatever he wants with it. He paid, I think,
$26 million to one of Melania's friends as an event planner for the inaugural. Yeah. And they raised twice as much money as any previous inauguration, even though the inauguration was about a quarter the size of Obama's inauguration.
But you don't know how many people are coming, you know, till the day gets.
Right.
It's not like they're RSVPing filet or chicken.
$107 million.
It was the biggest inauguration ever. We'll go through that again.
It was in terms of money. So that's my theory.
That's
that
interesting.
If it were me.
Okay, but then why
I would have done it like
why does
that.
Cohen come out and say that at all then? Because that seems to be screwing Trump on this.
There's a lawsuit filed by Common Cause, I think, and I think it was in response to some sort of something that happened in the Common Cause action. I don't know if it's a suit. I don't know if it's administrative action in front of the Federal Election Commission, the FEC. I think he wanted it to clear and basically state unequivocally what happened. Now, you know, the fact that he said that his position is it was not a campaign contribution doesn't mean it wasn't a campaign contribution. Okay, but
and remember, the Wall Street Journal reporters had nailed this. They nailed the account where it came from. They found the LLC. They found it was Michael Cohen that was registered it. What seems like it happened is that, remember, this was in the heat of the campaign. It was 2 weeks before Election Day when this payoff occurred. Michael Cohen created a new LLC, and he didn't put a registered agent. He himself was the agent on the LLC. So it was all easy to trace if you know where to look. And so it seems like he was in a hurry, and he maybe wasn't as careful as he would have been for his normal payoffs.
Sure.
And so there was nothing he could say. I mean, it was there in black and white.
Sure,
and
her lawyer said that at the time the money was handed over, Michael Cohen said, this is from my personal funds.
Okay.
Wait,
but
Cohen said from his personal funds, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So did Cohen, this response that we have publicly, that we now know that he says, oh, yes, I made this payment, but it wasn't from this or that, was that in a courtroom?
No, he wasn't
compelled to say this. So this is why I'm surprised by it, because, oh, fine, there's a lawsuit and they're looking for this and it's going to come out. But the standard procedure would be do not say anything for as long as humanly possible or deny in public. Why would he come out and let that be known in public?
I think it was because he was trying to avoid the suggestion that he was reimbursed by the campaign or that this was somehow an in-kind contribution to the campaign.
That seems like something you say for court, though. Not let get public. Yeah. Not draw more attention to this.
I think he's trying to avoid court.
Maybe Trump never paid him back, and now he's ticked off. Well, are they still close?
Yeah.
Because we know Donald has a way of saying, we're not paying for this, we're not paying for that.
But that's why if you put your, you know, for me, if I get in it, and this is dangerous, but I got into Donald Trump's head, and if you think like Donald Trump, you take it out of the inaugural fund. It's not his money.
Yeah.
And no one's ever going to find out where it comes from.
He probably wouldn't have known that, though. Somebody would have had
he would have had somebody who told him that.
Think about how many things that they seem to not know very well, going
Trump
into
seems
this.
To not know.
Yes,
but he's bringing in all these people that don't know either, right? I mean, he didn't have a lot of career politicians, people that are Washington-based knowing stuff.
Do you know why?
Because he's drained in the swamp.
No, there were many, 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 many. I mean, large number of people in Washington.
Well, he refused to work with anybody probably that worked at all for Obama, right?
Or he refused to work with anybody
who swear loyalty to him,
right? Who had ever said anything nasty about him.
So all those career professionals that you saw during the campaign talking about how dangerous this guy is, what a nut he is, his foreign policy statements are crazy.
Yeah.
All those guys, which could have been brought in, the adults in the room,
right?
He said no. And so he's working with people that have never done this before.
And even the conservative writer Ramesh Panuru wrote a column yesterday or today in which he's not a never Trumper. And he said, remember the part about I only hire the best people? Yeah, that's not working out so well.
Yeah,
because in fact, the Washington Post today came out with a story that said 40% of Trump appointees to senior level positions have had ethical conflict issues.
Yeah,
40%. That's astonishing.
Well, I mean, the security clearance issues.
They're limiting his pool of people to take from or to hire because he won't go with somebody or folks who will not swear.
Yeah.
allegiance to him.
And so do you think, is that a standard operating procedure then when they're interviewing somebody?
No.
But with his office, that there is a demand of, I want to know that you can be loyal to this president, you won't speak out against him?
Well, it's not just that. They check
social media.
To see if they've ever said anything.
Facebook, yeah. We did learn yesterday that Jared Kushner, the reason for his lack of security clearance so far, he and Ivanka are up to their eyeballs in debt.
The 666 building, right? New York? That's a family issue.
It's credit card debt. Her last disclosure, which you could find online, she has paid down an American Express card. It was $100,000 to $150,000 in debt. She's now somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 in debt on her American Express card.
That's amazing because
they're like $50 million in debt.
She has a huge business. Isn't she making money, or she just leveraged that so bad?
I don't know what's happened, but they're like, that's why, because of their incredible indebtedness, that's why neither has been granted a security clearance.
That's a huge risk for blackmail or something.
Yes.
Oh. I mean, that is a real problem.
$50 to $75 million in debt.
Think about that for a second.
That's a lot of debt.
Now, the apple doesn't fall far from
the tree. Makes our little problem seem small, doesn't it?
Right, it does. But the apple doesn't fall far from the tree because Trump's been that...
Well, he's been up and down and up and down over the
several
years,
several
right?
zeros after
yes,
many
and
times
let's remember
life.
Where he got his, as Donald Jr. said, where he got a lot of the financing for their properties.
From Russia.
With love.
Guys, thank you so much for swinging by. I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you guys. Thank you, Patty, for letting the boys come by.
Thank you, man.
We appreciate it. We'll see you guys next week. We're going to do the news in a minute here on 720 WGN. Tonight, two of the NHL's best take the ice on WGN TV. It's Kane and the Hawks hosting Ovechkin and the Capitals. Blackhawks, Capitals, tonight at 7 on WGN TV. By the way, Ben Bradley from WGN Television tweeted earlier tonight that he heard, I don't know if he confirmed this, that Patrick Kane swung by the wake for Commander Paul Bauer on Friday night, which is a very nice gesture if that is
indeed true. Yeah, it's possible. There were hundreds that were there.
I imagine there were thousands there. I'm sure it was huge.
And they expect even more for the funeral procession through the streets. The mayor and police department asking that it be a sea of blue.
Yeah.
As the casket is traveled through to the church.
It's incredibly sad. I mean, I have a brother-in-law who's a Chicago police officer. I know there are a lot of issues with the community and police officers all over the country, and it's a lot of stuff to work through. But it's incredibly sad whenever something like this happens. And Heidi Stevens from our Chicago Tribune, a good friend of the show, knew Commander Bauer because her daughter goes to school with his daughter. And she wrote some very heart-wrenching pieces this week about the commander and his life and what a good man he was and a good person he was. I'm looking across at the realtor building right now across the street here on Michigan Avenue where the flag is flying at half staff. All right. Oh. It's 2:33 in the morning. Let's get a check of the headlines. Here's Roger Badish. The Matt Propala Show here on Radio 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower building on Michigan Avenue. It's a beautiful night downtown in Chicago. Actually, the lights are pretty. It's pretty dark out. I guess what if the Christmas lights all finally came down or something? Something's different out there. It is darker than it's been. Okay, have you been sitting by the television every night, tuned in to NBC, watching the Olympics, or tuned into NBC? There's like five different channels it's on, but there is Olympics on day and night in my house right now, and we're enjoying every moment of it. Our friend Andrew Wittenberg from KSL TV in Salt Lake City is in Pyeongchang, and he jumps back on the phone with us. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
How's it going, Matt? Good to see you. Good to hear from you, and hope you guys are doing well.
We are doing fine. It's good to chat with you. I'm wondering, just said to me, Andrew sounds a little tired, and we're thinking, it's been a couple, you've been there a long time now, Andrew. Are you getting worn out, or how's it going?
Doing okay. It's actually kind of a down day for us a little bit. As far as coverage goes, we had Nathan Chin, the figure skater, go a little bit ago. But aside from that, we haven't been too crazy today as far as having to run around. So that's actually been nice a little bit. But yeah, it gets to be a little bit of a long trip after a while. We've been here since the 5th or whatever. So yeah, it's a long, long trip.
So about 12 days now you've been in Pyeongchang. That is a long time. And do you stay until the closing ceremonies?
Yeah, we're here until the 27th, actually, is when we fly back. So we've still got a ways to go yet.
All right, that is a long time. Now, you mentioned Nathan Chen. And I don't know what happened, and I'm not going to ask because I'm sure that just aired live if he just went. But that'll be, I'm sure, featured prominently on NBC later today. But so was that his long program then or short program? He did one the other night, I know, and it did not go well.
Yeah, that was the short program a couple of nights ago here, I guess, actually 2 nights ago in the United States. But then the long program, the free skate, just wrapped up. It was in live in prime time on NBC, I believe, last night. So I don't think we're spoiling anything, but just had a tremendous program and I think did what everybody thought he was going to do the whole time. And he came through and he broke the record for quad jumps. He did six of them
and he landed them.
His free skate. Yeah. See, landed them, look great. And, just no one seems to really know what got into in those first couple of performances other than maybe it was just the pressure. I mean, he's still a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. You feel so bad for him. And, you know, there's so much like America is riding on him and NBC, quite honestly, you know, it has to figure out ahead of time who are the big stars going to be. And they prepare those packages and get everything ready to really, you know, get us, you know, emotionally involved in these athletes. And then the poor guy goes out there and just has such a tough, tough short program. And he fell multiple times. So, and he was like in 13th place or worse after that first round. So as great as he did, there's no chance for him to get back into medal contention, right?
Right, yeah. He was out of medal contention for all intents and purposes. He, there was just he would have taken some big, big errors by the Japanese guy who was in front of the guy where they throw all the Winnie the Pooh dolls.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
They throw all the Winnie the Pooh bears on the ice after. It would have taken something for him, you know, I guess. But he finished in fifth. So he really
His way up. Yeah.
I think it was I read the fifth highest Olympic score in history for a long program, or the free skate is what they call it now.
Yeah.
But, it's just, he did well, but I actually talked to Scott Hamilton, late last night, which is early, you know, Friday morning or Saturday morning. And it was one of those things where, he said, you know, I've talked to all the people that I know inside the figure skating world. I've talked to all the beat writers, talked to all the experts, and watched every performance, every practice, and you can't come up with anything. It wasn't like an illness. It wasn't some undisclosed injury, and maybe it could be something as simple as what seems to be the obvious explanation is that it was just the pressure that, you know, builds and builds. And like you say, he's probably been hearing about it for months now. He's been seeing all the stuff on TV, doing all the interviews for weeks and weeks building up to this, and, you know, just perhaps was a pretty bad time to have a crummy week as far as execution goes.
Yeah, that will happen to people. And now is Nathan Chen basically done because they already did this team thing? Now he had this. He doesn't have anything else to do, right? His Olympics are over?
Yeah, I believe so. You know, from time to time, we've seen like an exhibition skate over the course of the years in the Olympics, but there's still, I believe, ice dancing yet to go. But as far as individual competition, yeah, that's wrapped. That's it. Well, let's not forget about the women's. That's next week.
Yeah.
But for Nathan Chen specifically, yeah, I think he's done.
He is done. What is, you know, we've been really enjoying snowboard cross and skeleton. What has been in the speed skating? I mean, there's a lot of the Olympics. You've been covering them for a while, Andrew. Are they evolving to bring in millennials more, because some of these sports are just much more exciting than when you and I were kids in the Winter Olympics?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just cool changes that have taken place, or they're trying to bring in more of the sports that people are excited about these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an evolution thing, and I think the Olympics has had to, the entire Olympic program through the IOC, both summer and winter, has had to go through a real learning curve over the last 10 years. And figure out a way to make themselves relevant. And I think they've done it more so in the Winter Olympics with some of the more progressive sports, you know, like you mentioned the snowboard cross, which, I mean, it's just been thrilling. And we had an athlete from Park City that we were following pretty closely, Faye Galini, who was just great and just kind of came up short, didn't make it out of the quarterfinals. Mm. But, you know, those are great. And the slope style skiing and boarding, we'll be watching McCray Williams tomorrow. He's a Park City guy that's into the slope style stuff. It's just great to see that, because I think that's where the future lies. Like you mentioned, you know, when we were growing up, it was like, wow, this luge thing is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, they go and they take it to the next level, and they had skeleton, which was like, I think started in 2002. And then they've started adding in some of the more X Games type sports. And I think that's really helped because those have done really well in prime time. And as far as ratings and attention goes. So, I mean, yeah, I think you have to do that. And I think the IOC has done a pretty good job, particularly in the Winter Olympics, and modernizing a bit.
I'll tell you, Andrew, I've been saying this for years, and people always argue with me. I can't find anybody else to agree with me, but I think the Winter Olympics are like 10 times better than the Summer Olympics. I will watch freaking curling, and in the Summer Olympics, it's, you know, they're running. Okay, they're running, they're jumping over things or whatever. It's just not as exciting as the Winter Olympics are to me. I just think there's just a lot more fun and excitement, and I don't know, the Winter Olympics, there's something about them that just grabs me a little bit more. A story is out that we're reading here that the opening ceremony was hit by a cyber attack. Are they talking about that at all over there? Are you talking about that with anybody?
We heard some of the notifications about it, and I saw some of the headlines back in the States. I mean, nothing that I noticed as far as any sort of problems connecting to anything or, you know, other than, say, the Wi-Fi might get a little slow when you're around a huge crowd of people. Yeah, I haven't seen anything personally to give me any sort of indication that I had been hacked or there'd been any sort of data compromised or anything like that. But then again, I don't know that I would have noticed it in general at all. So, we saw that it had been hacked and that there was connectivity and, oh, my gosh, the problems. But again, I didn't experience anything personally, so I can't speak to it. But yeah, we certainly seen the news about there had been something going on with some sort of hack on that Friday. But I honestly couldn't tell you anything from a firsthand experience that I noticed that was anything amiss.
So they say that, you know, the website stopped working, couldn't print tickets, Wi-Fi went down in the stadium, TVs and internet at the press center went down. I haven't read about this, but I know there was supposed to be a big drone show at the opening ceremony that didn't happen. Was that weather related or was that because of technical issues? And could that have been part of this?
Well, we talked briefly about this last Saturday, I think.
Yeah.
And when you were asking about it, and there was news that had come out that they had anticipated this intense drone show. And the explanation we got at the time was it was extremely cold, it was extremely windy, and they didn't want to take a chance on anything being wrong with the Winter Olympics. And they had actually shot video of something similar like months ago that actually ended up airing in part during ceremony that was part of it. But we saw the Olympic rings in the sky that did go on the broadcast, and I'm not sure if that's what it was or what it wasn't, but typically, and the reason I'm sort of being a little wishy-washy is it's not exactly like you get a really good explanation of things, the IOC, just about anything. So we don't know exactly what was compromised or what wasn't, or if that was even part of this hack. But, you know, like I say, I think anything, if you ever go to a Cubs game or whatever, you know the Wi-Fi is going to be a little slow in your people. And so that's about all that we noticed. We're like, oh, that's weird. It seems like the Wi-Fi is a little slow or having a little trouble connecting to the network, but, you know, that's not unusual around a big crowd of people. So to say that we were, like, immobilized or anything would definitely be not the way I would put it, but something could have happened, perhaps. And the explanation that we got initially from opening was that there was something that they just didn't want a chance with that drone show, and so that's why they didn't go through with it.
All right, well, that makes sense, and that could very well be, you know, what happened. What do you make of, or what is being talked about there, about the Olympic athletes of Russia? When it came out that this happened, that they're banning Russia from the Olympics because of this intense doping in Sochi, okay, we took that. And then they say, well, we're going to let athletes in. If they haven't been proven to have, you know, taken part in it and we can't prove it, then we have to let them in. So literally there are hundreds and hundreds of athletes. And I can understand the individual athletes, I guess. But it's weird to me that there is a hockey team that's Olympic athletes of Russia. I mean, what is the difference between just letting the Russian, I mean, either they're in or they're not. How are people taking it there? Is it odd or weird that they've done it sort of really halfway like this?
I'd put it this way. Yeah, it's odd for me, too, because I think the same thing. I'm like, well, clearly they're all Russian. You know, and you see some of the hockey players that are former NHL guys that have gone back to the KHL that are sort of names, you know, and you're like, wait a second, what's going on here? This seems kind of weird that you guys are just Russians. But, you know, they passed, I guess, any sort of drug testing recourse that they had to go through, and they're in. But yes, it's weird. And it, actually, I know this sounds really strange, but I was eating at the McDonald's yesterday in Olympic Park because I wanted something that was just familiar and seemed normal to me. So I was eating at the McDonald's, and there's this long line to get into the McDonald's at Olympic Park. There always is, for whatever reason. And it's not like there's not McDonald's in South Korea. They're everywhere. But in Olympic Park, for some reason, everybody wants to eat at McDonald's. So we're in line, and I see all these people come up with, like, Russian hockey jerseys on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, you do the old, oh, are you Russian? Do you speak English? And like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, we start kind of joking around a little bit, like, oh, how's everything going, you know, with the... And we're just talking to these people, and they're like, yeah, it's fine. It's no big deal. We knew it was going to be fine. We knew that there were going to be Russian athletes here, so we came anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't seem like it affected the, like, the proverbial Russian fan who was going to make the trip to the Olympics as a fan and a spectator to be here. So, yeah, it just kind of seems weird that they went through this whole dog and pony show to make it seem like they were putting in some sort of serious ban against Russians when they've practically been competing in every sport.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, that's definitely a little strange and sort of uncertain as to how all that played out. You know, and I know there were some who did not make it here because of the doping issue individually. But, yeah, it's sort of surreal to see it, and it almost makes you wonder why it seemed so heavy-handed the way it was, like, we're not going to let the Russians in, and then they're going to be Olympic athletes from Russia, and they're not going to have their flag. But it seems just kind of normal to me. Like, everybody just knows they're from Russia, and they just have a different name on their uniform.
Yeah, and they just don't get the national anthem if they win stuff, but it really hasn't. Yeah, it's weird. It's like it was a big show to look like we're being really tough on this, but then more kind of like backdoor, don't, you know, we're gonna tell everybody we're really upset with you, but you can still come, we'll still take your money, you still get to play. And I imagine, you know, they've had Olympics there, they want future Olympics to be there, and, you know, the IOC has had some issues over the years with how that all works out with the voting and things like that. So I think it raises a lot of questions. I imagine they'll answer in the years to come. What are you looking forward to this week? What's the exciting thing coming up?
Yeah, so you mentioned snowboard cross. There's some slope-style skiing now coming. We were all just really excited in the snowboard slope-style events last week. That was great to see Chloe Kim and then Ariel Gold get gold and bronze, respectively, in that. So we're looking forward to the men's slope-style skiing, where, you know, where they go through the course and they have the rails and the jumps and everything. We've got a couple of Utahns that we'll be watching. That's always exciting because that was one of the first events in Sochi where the U.S. swept the podium. You had Josh Christensen, Gus Kenworthy, Nick Gepper, who's from Indiana, not too far from you guys, that they swept the podium in that. And so we're going to see if they can do well again. That's one thing I'm looking forward to. We'll have bobsled. That'll be big this week. You'll start seeing more of that now that the luge and skeleton events are wrapping, because the bobsled, I mean, those things just wreck the sliding courses. I mean,
oh, do they really? They have to save that.
Incredibly heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they get the luge and the skeleton out of the way first because it's not as invasive on the surface. So two man, four man bobsled, which they call bobsleigh in the Olympics for whatever reason. Yeah, there'll be bobsledding next week as well. And then women's figure skating, of course, will always be a big draw for spectators.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you, I'm not super familiar with the women's because we've been focused so much on Nathan Chen. But, yeah, we'll be up in the mountains. Ted Ligety, who's one of the sort of promoted athletes from these games, he'll be in the giant slalom tomorrow, Sunday here, Saturday night in primetime back home. So, yeah, we'll be watching Ted Ligety, of course. He's a Park City guy, born and bred. So, yeah, there's quite a bit to look forward to still yet.
That sounds good. Well, enjoy the week. We'll try to check in with you next weekend if you're available and have a couple of minutes. Everybody listening, follow Andrew on Twitter at KSL Andrew. He's tweeting like crazy about his experiences at the Olympics, so it's a good follow there. Thanks so much as always, Andrew. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, we'll talk to
you
soon. Enjoy it. Stay out of trouble there in Pyeongchang. Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City at KSL Andrew on Twitter. News is coming up, 720 WGN. Two 2:58 in the morning, Matt Babala here with you, 720 WGN. After the news, we're going to check in with listener Wally, that world-traveling guy that we chat with once in a while. He's in the Ukraine right now. Huh, interesting. We'll see what the news is over there, as the news here on Friday was about 13 indictments of Russians. By the way, so we're talking with Andrew, and I meant to bring up Adam Rippon, but I didn't know what he had done, so I looked it up. Adam finished about 10th. I think he finished 10th. 11th. Yeah. Did he finish 11th? He didn't quite make correct top 10. So Adam was more famous for being Adam. Mm-hmm. In how Johnny Weir is Johnny Weir.
Right.
And for his dust up with Mike Pence and things like that. But he said a lot of really positive things to the young, to the gay youth of America, I think, about being yourself, being true to yourself. And I really enjoyed. He is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because now his skating career is probably over. He's 28. He's old for the Olympics because it's a lot of, as they write in this article, young guns ripping quads off left and right.
Yeah, right.
As Andrew mentioned, Nathan Chen was able to do. So his career is probably done as far as skating, but I think commenting and being a part of it as Johnny Weir and Terry Lipinski have made such a dynamic duo during these games, I think that will be part of his future. All right, after Wally, at 3:30, we have a guest on, a constitutional expert. I wanted to talk to somebody about the Constitution. I made a Facebook post this week about the NRA, and it has gotten a lot of comments. And I want to talk about that a little bit and about our Constitution, because people cling to the Second Amendment as if we've never changed anything in our Constitution. Mm-hmm. These are not the commandments that were written in stone. We have to live in this country based on the laws written by guys well over 200 years ago. We got to think about what works for us and what doesn't. And not everything has worked for us. Things have changed. I want to talk a little bit about that. So that's still coming up. This is the home of the Blackhawks, the Northwestern Wildcats, and now... And now, Chicago White Sox baseball. Baseball is back on our airwaves. 720 WGN Chicago. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Heard the tone, 3 a.m. Let's get the news from Roger. Thank you, Roger. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. You can follow us on Facebook at The Matt Bubala Show. Give us a like there or on Twitter at Matt Bubala. Joining us on the phone right now is listener Wally, our world traveling listener. I filled in for Brian Noonan last Sunday. Jess and I were here. Roger joined us for the end of the show, and Wally jumped on the phone with us last week Sunday. I think, Wally, what were you, about to get on a plane to Switzerland or Paris? Where were you headed back then?
Absolutely. I was going to Zurich. And so I was there all this past week, and right now I'm in Kiev, Ukraine, and then heading back to Zurich tomorrow.
You're in the Ukraine. Okay. And you explained to us on Sunday. Now, Justin, I can't remember. Explain to us again what you do for a living. Why are you traveling all over the world so much?
So it's operational consulting, helping companies operate better. And my client has operations around the world. They've got operations in 9 different countries, and we're working with them and with some of their suppliers, our manufacturing company. So, yeah, I get to travel all over the place. Although this weekend is fun, this is just a break from the from a couple weeks in Switzerland. So I decided to come here to Ukraine.
I'm sorry, you spent a couple weeks in Switzerland. So for fun, you said, "Hey, let's go to the Ukraine."
Yes.
That seems like it's backwards.
I have spent a lot of time in Switzerland, and I will spend time. And I had a couple days, so I took off last night and flew through Vienna and got here to Kiev about midnight, and right now I'm in the main square, Independence Square. So if you followed any of the protests that took place in 04 and then again in probably about 14, this is the main place right here, right in the middle of Kiev.
Yeah, how are things in the Ukraine right now? Because it's very tumultuous, isn't it?
Well, certainly, yeah. With the Russians taking Crimea, it's been a terrible time, and they're also occupying part of eastern Ukraine. Excuse me, but I mean, here in Kiev, it seems pretty calm. But there's parts of Ukraine that are battling against the Russians.
Okay, so you decided to go there for fun. So, what fun is there in Kiev in the Ukraine?
Well, it's my first time here. My wife is from Ukraine.
Oh, okay.
And so it's my first time here, and I'm walking around. I'm playing tourist today, just walking around and trying to see the sights. And just a quick trip, and wanted to see this. We've got a lot of friends that have come here, and a lot of history here also. So just spending a day walking around and seeing things here.
When you're in Switzerland or in the Ukraine right now, are you paying it to what do you get newspapers? Are they big still? Are newspapers much bigger in countries like that than they are? Are they not dying as much, I guess, as they are here in America? And are you reading about the Olympics? Are you seeing a lot about, is Switzerland caring about their athletes? Does the Ukraine have athletes in the Olympics, and are they caring about them? Are you reading much Olympic stuff?
Absolutely. Ukrainians definitely do have athletes here. First off, on the papers, the papers are pretty big. you know, like a lot of the hotels will have the papers. The problem is they're in local languages.
Sure.
Sometimes you'll see a very abbreviated version of USA Today. I was watching the Olympics in Switzerland on Eurosport, and it's all in German. So I had no idea what they were talking. You know, I had no idea what they were saying, but I was watching some of the events, and they certainly were focusing on the German athletes, but showing other athletes also. But again, I had no idea what they were saying because everything was in German.
Yeah,
but it is a big thing. It does seem to be a big thing. Certainly, you know, in the papers, you'll see pictures in Switzerland. You'll see pictures of some of the Swiss athletes on the cover if they've won medals.
That makes sense. So we've had some big news here in the States in the last couple of days, Wally. We had a school shooting in Florida, and then on Friday, Robert Mueller handed out 13 indictments against Russians for meddling in our election. And I'm wondering, is that being covered overseas very much? Have you read anything about that locally, or are you only seeing that on, like, international CNN and things like that?
Where I'm seeing it is, or hearing about it is on WGN. Really, that's my link back with the States and with Chicago. I'm not seeing much of it on, you know, there's BBC Europe and they're covering that, on that. And there's Bloomberg News also. And so, yes, it's being covered like that. But again, I'm getting kind of a local flavor, U.S. flavor on those kinds of stories. I'm not seeing anything really, but I wouldn't understand it if it was in German or Ukrainian.
Sure, sure. And I don't think I asked you this when we talked on Sunday. You travel a lot overseas right now as an American the last year and a half, because it's been a tumultuous time, we could say, with American relations with some foreign countries. How are you still received very well when you travel, or what is it like to be an American traveling abroad right now?
It's pretty, I think it's good. I haven't had any issues at all, you know, with the U.S. passports. It's interesting because I think with the Trump presidency, at least the people that I'm dealing with, who for the most part are business people, you know, that I'm able to spend much time with, I think there's at least when Trump came in, a sense that there was someone who's going to help kind of maybe control things in the world a little bit, maybe a little bit more than President Obama did. Now there seems to be just kind of, as many of us in the States, are kind of an interest to see what President Trump has tweeted lately, or who he's picking to fight with, kind of on the international stage or even on the domestic stage. But I think there's a little bit of, at least the people again that I'm dealing with, probably a little bit of a positive vibe on the presidency. But I have not seen any issues personally, you know, with, like I say, with the U.S. passport or any animosity at all, or
well,
anything towards Americans.
All right, so a couple days in Ukraine. You're headed back to Switzerland and then back home, or where are you off to next?
That's correct. Yep. Now then I'll be home for a couple days and then off again.
For a couple of days and then off again to where?
Actually, I'll be in Illinois for a week, and then in Italy for a week, and then back in Illinois for 2 weeks, and then back to Switzerland.
Is this all for the same client, or do you have multiple clients that you're flying around for?
No, same client. Yep, same client.
Are you fixing a lot of problems, or are you just kind of hanging out and saying, yeah, you know, this is fun?
It's a long process, but we absolutely are fixing problems for them, yeah.
This
Ukraine is my 10th country in 6 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wally.
Probably my sixth currency, too. Because not all, I mean, you know, the euro obviously covers a lot of countries.
Sure.
But I've been in a bunch that don't have the euro, including here in Ukraine. So.
Do you collect a little money from every country you go to and keep a little bit?
I'm trying not to collect too much unless I know I'm going to be going back there. But I do. I probably have, I think, four or five different currencies in my briefcase right now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. That'll be something to look back on someday.
Yep.
All right, Wally, we'll let you have some fun in the Ukraine, and we will check in with you again from another exotic location sometime soon.
Sounds good, Matt. Thanks. Take care.
All right, bud. Safe travels. We'll talk to you soon. That's our listener, Wally, who I don't know how much he enjoys the job. Hopefully he enjoys a lot. He seems always of good spirit when he chats with us, but he is logging a lot of air miles traveling around the world. All right, we're going to get into the whole issue of what happened in Florida this week and my take on it, and we'll be willing to hear from you as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and the text line, 720-WGN. Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. All right, so let's chat a little bit about what happened in Florida this week. There was another school shooting, as you all know. Those seem to happen more and more often. A couple of things. One is, let's be factual about it. The Washington Post wrote a very interesting article. We keep throwing around, there have been 18 school shootings in 2018 already. 18 school shootings in 2018. Which, when you hear that, you think, holy crap. There have been 18 school shootings in 2018? It's happening so often that we just don't even really hear about it anymore. Roger, you've seen that number bandied about. Yeah. All the major news organizations use it. All sorts of congressmen and congresspeople and thing and politicians are reiterating that number.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good number.
Nope.
Washington Post did a very interesting story looking into the group, and I forget their name, I don't have the Post story in front of me, who came up with that number and who are the ones who tout it. So it's interesting. Their definition, so by definition, they are including any time a gun is discharged on a school property,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, that makes sense. And they say, hey, anytime a gun is discharged on a school property, that encourages a feeling of not being safe there, no matter when it happens or how it happens.
Right.
There was a gun on a school property and it was fired. So they counted somebody who, in their parked car, committed suicide at a school earlier this year at night when nobody was there. They counted a shot that was fired or shots that were fired late at night at a school building when nobody was there.
Mm-hmm.
So there, I don't know, you know, and I agree. Anytime there's, you know, if you heard the next day, yeah, somebody killed themselves here last night
mm-hmm.
in their car, or yeah, some shots were fired here late at night when nobody was here, that would make me feel unsafe and not happy about being near that school. That wouldn't be good at all. But that's different than what we're really talking about here is a gunman coming in and shooting up a school. That does happen, too. Hasn't happened 18
shooting
times.
Shooting up school during a school day with students and faculty yeah. and staff on the premise.
The type of thing that happened
yes.
in Parkland, Florida. Now, it doesn't have to be 17 people. If somebody walked in and shot one person, that would, to me, qualify as
a school
shooting.
Or if someone just walked on campus with a gun.
See, I don't know. That,
which
that, gets
that
into a gray
is
area.
Happening. Well, let's put it this way. We are learning about more of those incidents. There are always phone calls. There are threats that are called in. Or there's someone who has been at school and seen or thought they had seen someone with a gun or seen or thought they'd seen a gun in a locker. And they have told the school officials. Those kinds of things we are learning more and more about. Now, whether or not they are happening more than they have in the past, we don't know. Because though there's no way to know any credible claims in the past. We don't. In other words, this happened with when rape victims started to become more public and they started to talk more. And the claim was that, or the discussion was that, well, maybe they're just talking more about it now and as opposed to when it used to be hidden, when they didn't talk about it. So the discussion was, are there more rapes happening now than before? And nobody could answer that. And so we're still dealing with that same kind of thing now about the guns in the schools.
Well, it's a lot easier to know when there's school shootings, that's for sure, because they're pretty public. So this group that Every Town for Gun Safety is the one that comes up with these numbers and have been pushing them. They define it as any time a firearm discharges a live round inside a school building or on a school campus or grounds. Now, one of these 18... the suicide I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
not only was it not when a school was in session, but the school itself had been closed down for the better part of a year.
So even the next
morning, there was
right.
going to be no teachers or kids
right.
there. So let's face it, that one shouldn't count, right? It
should.
No. According to the Post, just five of Every Town's 18 school shootings listed for 2018 happened during school hours and resulted in any physical injury.
Okay.
Another three appeared to be intentional shootings, but didn't hurt anyone. Two more involved guns, one carried by a school police officer and the other by a licensed peace officer who ran a college club, that were unintentionally fired and again led to no injuries. At least seven of every town's 18 shootings took place outside normal school hours. So, five happened during school hours and resulted in physical injury. Three were intentional shootings but didn't hurt anyone. So I will give them at least eight. So let's just say eight school shootings.
That's still
so far in 2018. It's February.
Right.
It's not like it's the end of the year.
And we haven't even done, have we done 8 weeks yet in the school year, in the new year?
Right. They had the first week off probably. Some schools go back right away. It depends on the school.
But what I'm saying is there's, forget about the school
We've had about
weeks.
6 weeks at best.
Yeah, 6 weeks, four, five, six and a half weeks. So we've had more shootings than
We're
one a week.
We're averaging about one a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And any is too many.
True.
And so there's that. But I wanted to clear that up because I'm not going to be screaming, oh, my God, there's been 18 shootings. Right. It's insanity.
Let's be a little more realistic. Yeah. And as you said, one is too many.
Absolutely.
This should not be happening. There are other places in our world where this does not happen. There are places in this world where worse things happen in schools.
Yeah.
And there's, again, with gang violence, everyone admits that there is no one answer. There are myriads of answers that could help reduce gang violence. And I think there are myriad of answers that could help reduce this type of thing.
Well, absolutely there are. So here's what I did this week. I went on my Facebook page, The Matt Bubala Show, and you're more than welcome to give us a like there. And here's what I wrote. This was on Wednesday afternoon. I wrote, okay, NRA, you win. You'll never let us reduce the number of guns in America, so let's try it your way. You spent almost $60 million on political activities in 2016. Go ahead in 2018 and spend that amount arming every single school worker in America, and let's see if that stops these shootings. If it works, you win, and we'll let you write the gun laws any way you want. But if there is even one mass shooting in a school, you promise never to spend another dollar on political activities again. Deal? And
they take you up on it?
One person wrote deal.
Oh, nice.
I don't know that they're not. And I gave that a like. I'm like, thank you for at least acknowledging. Here's the offer on the table.
Right.
And everybody else went off in their different directions, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of people like to write guns don't kill people. And I am sorry. I know that they can't act on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But guns kill people, folks. Let's admit it. Cars kill people. Arrows kill people. Knives kill people. Heart attacks kill people. Mm-hmm. Lots of things kill people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just people that kill people. Yes, somebody has to pull the trigger. You are right about that. But guns kill people. And guns like we allow people to have in their hands, like the AR-15, kill lots of people.
Very quickly.
Very easily. And one of the commenters on my Facebook page wrote, Matt, nothing has changed in the last 200 years, or wrote something like, Matt, we've owned guns for over 200 years and nothing has changed but people. And I wrote back, do you realize how funny it is that you're saying that the only thing that has changed in 200 years is people? Because when our founding fathers were writing the Constitution, guns weren't like they are here. They didn't have an AR-15.
Mm-mm.
We had muskets.
One shot at a time.
One shot about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You couldn't pull this off. And then people like to say people kill people with cars. People kill people with knives. I haven't seen a mass 17-person stabbing.
Nope.
Yeah, you could stab seven people maybe. Maybe five.
And you're
probably,
and
they wouldn't all die.
Easier to take them down, too.
But people would rush and tackle somebody. When somebody's walking by with an AR-15, you don't rush them.
Yeah.
The heroic coach got in front of people and died doing so.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to take somebody down who can pull off, you know, several rounds, you know, what, 30, 40 rounds a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This lasted for 8 minutes. I don't know. I haven't seen a total on how many shots were fired. I imagine it's going to be in the hundreds. People do kill people. guns, people with guns can kill lots of people. And you know, we stick to the Second Amendment right we have to be armed. And it's, I'm sorry, but we have made so many changes to the Constitution over the years, and the Constitution was written so long ago. I don't understand our fearfulness in looking at this. And people wanted to throw abortion at me and throw mental health at me and all these things. And I understand we got a lot of issues here in America, and mental health is one of them. But as somebody else posted, so is the mental health that much better in all these other countries? Are we failing our mental health for society so badly that we're the only country in the world that regularly has mass shootings? We can't just pin it all on the mental health care that we give to America. And if you do want to, nobody's stepping up and saying, let's pour billions of dollars into mental health help. The Republicans running the country right now have not done that. The Democrats didn't do it either. You're right. But nobody is stepping forward and saying, you're right, let's spend billions and billions to help and make sure we have well people. And even if you do, not everybody's going to be mentally well. It's not going to happen. You need licenses, and you, and here's the other thing. Oh, Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the country. A, I think that's been debunked. They're not as tough as everybody likes to say. B, there's lax gun laws all around us, and the studies have shown that a lot of the guns coming into Chicago are being brought in from outside of Chicago.
Outside the state.
Even if Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the country and we're failing, we don't have mass shootings in the schools.
Yeah.
That's different. We have gang members killing each other, and people, unfortunately, a lot of collateral damage from that. But that is most of the shooting here in Chicago, is criminals and gang members. And while every life is precious, I agree, that is a different story than somebody getting an AR-15 and just walking in and mowing down people left and right for no reason. Gangland and mafia hits and things like that are different than this.
Still unacceptable, but different.
Of course, yes. But different.
Can I read this? Because we've discussed this before, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but if you're going to bring up the Second Amendment, read the whole thing. Can we read the whole thing? It's not that long.
We're going to read it right now, Roger. It says, a well-regulated militia.
Stop.
Comma,
a well-regulated militia,
comma,
thank you,
being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed.
We have the National Guard in Illinois. That is a well-regulated militia. They are on call. They are armed.
And we have the armed services. We have a lot of stuff.
Right.
That maybe, and maybe you could say, yeah, but here's what they meant.
Nah.
No, hold on, Roger. Hold on. You can say, because the Constitution and the Declaration is nothing if not interpretation. That's what it's all about, right? So you could say, hey, what they're saying about the people is the people have to be able to rise up against the power, just like our revolutionary forefathers rose up against a tyrannical government. We have to be able to do that. If the government takes over, we have to be able to fight back.
Right. But in a well-regulated militia.
A well-regulated. That's the part. Not just militia, a well-regulated.
Right. Right.
We need to regulate our right to keep and bear arms. I'm not saying you can't have a rifle in your house. I'm not saying you can't have a handgun. We need to do background checks. We need to do all these things to make sure that the mentally ill don't have them. But for God's sakes, why do you need something that can put off so many rounds per minute? Now, if you're going to make the argument because we have to fight back against our government, then that's a big argument we have to have, because there are people who are building bunkers and arming themselves to the teeth for the day that comes when we have this civil war again. But those aren't the people we think are healthy and well, are they? All right, we've got to get to the news, and then we have got a guest, a constitutional expert, to talk about the Constitution, how it's changed over the years, and how we interpret the Second Amendment. News is next, 720 WGN. Appelbaum with you here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Joining us on the phone right now is Chris Ann Hall. She is a constitutional expert. She is a believer in liberty. Chris Ann, I'm reading your website right now, and I'm thinking you're not going to agree with me on a lot of things that I have to say here today. So this should be very interesting, but good, because I know that you have really dedicated your life to the Constitution and constitutional law and defending liberty. So explain to me kind of what you do and where you come from in your beliefs and your interpretations of constitutional law and how you teach it and talk about it.
Okay, well, I don't teach constitutional law. I teach the Constitution. Constitutional law hasn't followed the Constitution for a very long time. So what we have now is a judicial system that thinks that judges and lawyers know more about the Constitution than the men who wrote it. And because the Constitution is a contract, you have to interpret it or apply it based on contract law, not based on whatever the modern thinking of the meanings of the words might be. It's a principle of contract law called the meeting of the minds, that the drafters of the contract determine the meaning of the contract. And so I don't teach interpretations or opinions about the Constitution. I teach history, I teach fact, and I teach the written and established intent by those who created the Constitution itself.
Okay, so let me ask you, because, you know, it's 200 years later, what do we have besides interpretation? I know you have whatever writings that the Founding Fathers left behind at the time, but don't we have to interpret? Isn't that what has to be done here to figure out how the Constitution lives on? Because the Constitution was, Thomas Jefferson, I believe, said or wrote, it's a living, breathing document. It will change over time, and it has changed over time.
Well, no, that's not actually a proper understanding of what Jefferson said. It's not a living, breathing document, meaning that it's open to interpretation as a method of changing the Constitution. The only way that the Constitution is open for change is through the official process of Article 5. To leave the Constitution open to interpretation by modern opinion, by those who are in power, by those who hold power, is to eliminate the protection that the Constitution created by creating a written document, a static standard, to keep the government moored. If we believe and we act as if the Constitution can be amended by government through judicial opinion, through congressional act, then what we're really saying is that America is not a constitutional republic, but a banana republic. And so we don't need to interpret it based on modern standards, because the Constitution is based on timeless principles, and we don't have to guess what it means, because the drafters of the Constitution wrote reams and reams and reams about what it means and why they did. I mean, they spent much time debating even the very punctuations within the Constitution so that their one single goal would be achieved, and that is to, as the Constitution's preamble says, to preserve the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Okay. So then explain to me I won't say your take, because you're not into interpreting it. You're saying that they laid it out and they made very clear how all these things are supposed to be. So the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There's a lot of debate about that amendment. What did the Founding Fathers clearly mean about the right to bear arms?
Well, what we need to understand is that the right to keep and bear arms is an essential element of an inherent right that exists within what is deemed to be the first law of nature, the right and the duty of self-preservation. So the right to keep and bear arms was placed within the Constitution, as Richard Henry Lee said, to be a reminder to the people to never allow the government to disarm them. The security of the free state, as Noah Webster said, was to keep the people from being disarmed so that the standing army could not rule over them. George Mason said, we must keep the people armed so that they are not enslaved by those in power. And so the purpose of the right to keep and bear arms is the fulfillment of that natural right that we have as individuals to secure our life, our liberty, and our property from those who want to take it from us.
So it really was written about the tyranny of government because they were fighting off, right? They were breaking away from what they felt was a tyrannical government being overseen by Britain, right? And so they wanted to make sure to set this up so that couldn't happen to these people. We're going to set up this country and the people will always be free. If the government ever gets too overpowering, the people have the power to take it back. Is that kind of what they were saying?
Yeah, pretty much, because the foundation that America is built upon is this understanding that that we hold certain truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And what we have to understand is to secure those rights, we have established a government that's based on self-governance, not government ruling over us, but people ruling over government. And in order to maintain that with that power of the people, then the people must be able to withstand those that are in power from trying to take those rights from the people. What we're talking about here is maintaining the essential rights and the natural rights of the people to protect themselves from all threats.
Okay, so how does that then relate to the current world we live in and the technology we have and the guns that we have available? Should there be absolutely no laws that prohibit gun ownership or things like that? I mean, where's the balance of what we have available today and the laws we have today? How do you think our gun laws should be? What do you think the gun laws should be in America today based on what the Founding Fathers put forth in the Second Amendment?
Well, what we need to understand, historically speaking, is that the arms that the citizens held back when the Second Amendment was written were state of the art at that time. As a matter of fact, the citizens of America and the men who wrote the Constitution were and those who fought for our independence actually had arms that were superior to that of the government themselves. And so to argue that because we're more technologically advanced, that it changes the principle that was embodied within this, now a time-tested principle, mind you, not something that was just invented in 1789, to argue that time has changed that principle is to deny history and truth itself.
Is to deny history and truth itself. How are we denying truth itself if we change
because history proves the truth. That's why they're called self-evident truths. They're axiomatic truths. And history proves the truth that if the government can out-arm the people, then the people cannot be free. And if the people do not have the ability to defend themselves, their lives, their liberties, and their properties, then they themselves are not free. And so it's not a matter of, are we more technologically advanced and do we need to change this or amend that? It's a matter of maintaining the proper application of that principle that says the people have an inherent right to defend themselves. And if we don't have an inherent right to defend ourselves, then what we have is something that is given to us by government, given to us by documents, or given to us by people. And things that can be given can be taken away. And then things are not rights anymore. They're privileges. And that's the whole purpose for codifying the Second Amendment, was to remind the people that the right to keep and bear arms is an essential right that is necessary to the protection of the individual and, as a society, the duty that we have to protect our neighbors.
Okay, so they write a well-regulated militia being necessary mm-hmm. to the security of a free state. So that's not referring to Illinois having the Illinois National Guard or states' rights to stay free?
No, that's not what that means.
Then why do they write that there? Why don't they just write, hey, everybody can have a gun so that we can, you know, step up when we need to?
Well, because that's not how they spoke. Okay, so they wrote in the manner in which they spoke, and they explained precisely what they meant in those terms. In their writings, in the debates and the ratification debates, Madison took copious notes. They wrote letters to each other. You have the Anti-Federalist Papers, you have the Federalist Papers. And George Mason, who is deemed by history the father of the Bill of Rights and the Second Amendment being part of the Bill of Rights, he asked during the debate, who are the militia? He said they are now the whole body of the people except public officers. He says, but I cannot say who the militia of the future may be if we do not if the paper on the table gets no alteration. He says the militia of the future may not be all classes, high and low and rich and poor. Noah Webster described the militia as being the whole body of the people. Richard Henry Lee said that in order to preserve liberty, it's essential that the whole body of the people always bear arms. And so for them, the militia was the whole body of able-bodied persons within that state. And the definition of a free state is that understanding that the people themselves are not being ruled over by a standing army. As a matter of fact, Noah Webster, he's the guy who wrote Webster's Dictionary. He was also part of the drafting of the Constitution. He was a fighter in our independence for liberty. And he said that a free state was when a standing army did not rule over you, and that when the people had the power to refuse the federal government, he said, no power can be raised on any pretense by Congress that would overpower the whole body of the people, because the people would bear the arms and they would be able to resist any law that Congress would mean to enforce that was unjust or unconstitutional.
And do you think we can do that today, Chris Ann? Do you think because we allow people to have guns and we have very little regulation on that, we can own AR-15s, if Congress overreached, we could step up and we could fight back?
Well, I think that there are many ways that we can fight back. One of the greatest gifts that that were given to us was the opportunity to self-govern. And because we're not a kingdom, we have opportunities to control government beyond that.
But we're talking about guns. We're talking about guns and whether we need to be able to be well-armed so that we can fight back against the government. I'm asking, do you think the way we stand right now and the way the government is and all the power and military power it has, have we accomplished that? Could we fight back if Congress overstepped its bounds?
Well, absolutely. I do believe that because, number one, you would have to assume then that everybody who worked for the federal government would side with the federal government if it had overstepped its bounds. For example, what if Congress passed a law that legalized slavery? Okay, so they would simply justify that by general welfare or national security needs or whatever they've done in the past. I mean, it wouldn't be outside our Congress. Because you'll remember that not only did Congress approve, but the president passed and the Supreme Court said that it was okay to imprison Japanese Americans in internment camps without any due process for up to 4 years, because at that point there was no reason to keep them. So if our Congress jumped its rails and decided to legalize slavery again, you would have to assume that everybody in the working for the federal government would then side with the federal government to enforce that law of slavery. I don't believe that is even a possibility. So, yes, I believe that the American people could resist a government if it came to that. But my point is, we have many ways that we are supposed to be resisting government peacefully through the Constitutional Republic before we get to that. But our framers also knew, as Samuel Adams said, that no people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. He said, but on the contrary, when the people become universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink underneath their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders. So through the ignorance that we have been teaching in the Constitution, we're actually losing liberty and we're sinking. We've lost more liberties from Washington, D.C. than we have than we will ever lose from any potential illegal immigrant or ISIS attack. And our framers knew that history always repeats. And those who cannot prepare for the future based on the history that governments always overstep their boundaries at some point in time are left to a matter of absolute despotism and uncontrollable servitude.
Well, you are painting a pretty bleak picture, Chris Ann, of the America we live in today. Is it that bad? Have we lost that many liberties? Is this not a good free country right now?
Well, think about it. Can you drink any milk that you want to drink?
I don't know. Can I not drink any milk that I want to drink?
No, no, because the FDA has told us that raw milk is illegal. And if you you can't buy raw milk in the store, you can't buy raw cheese in a store. If you want,
Chris Ann, if I bought a cow and I milked it, would it be illegal for me to drink that milk? I think I could go ahead and do that, couldn't I?
You could do that, but you couldn't sell that to anybody else, or you couldn't give it to your neighbor either.
Well, shouldn't we regulate what we can sell to other people and do? Shouldn't we have laws and regulations protecting the people of the country? We shouldn't have any of that?
I'm not saying, you know, you're speaking in hyperbole. I'm not saying
you just said I can't drink any milk I want.
Right, so you asked me, have we lost liberty? And I'm giving you examples of how we've lost liberty. Let me ask you.
Okay, you said because I can't drink any milk I want, which is a weird thing to say, Chris Ann. So I'm saying you're upset that I can't sell milk to anybody. And I'm asking you, I think a legitimate follow-up question, shouldn't there be some regulations to protect people from people selling things and the dangers that can occur with agriculture or medicines or things like that?
Well, what exactly do you think that protects us from?
Well, when it comes to milk, I don't know. Bad pasteurization of things that could be in the milk, in milk that wasn't pasteurized. I mean, wasn't pasteurization a good thing?
Do you know? No, actually, it's not a very healthy thing, but not for our bodies anyway. Let me ask you something. Do you know when the FDA began its existence and how milk was regulated before that?
I do not.
How many people got sick from milk before the FDA came around in the 1970s?
I don't know. How many people?
Not many. There are actually more. We have more problems with E. coli now that the FDA regulates than before. Let me ask you this question, since we're talking about loss of liberty. If the government is reading your emails, listening to your phone conversations, and storing up what you write and do on the internet, do you really have freedom of speech?
Well, now that's interesting, Chris Ann. There's a good argument there on where government oversteps its bounds. And yeah, that's
right.
Very interesting. That does seem to limit our freedom of speech, doesn't it? That's unreasonable search and seizure and a lot of other things that were
right.
Written in the Constitution. I only have a minute left, so let me ask you. You mentioned slavery. Oh, well, what if they reenacted slavery? Then the people would rise up against it. But that's interesting to point out because when the Constitution was written, they did not outlaw slavery. Slavery was around for a while before there was an amendment written to the Constitution to change that, right? So,
well, there is no amendment that ended slavery, okay? There's no amendment that ended slavery. And what we don't teach is the truth that the Constitution was established as an end to slavery. And that was an agreement of the states to do that.
Amendment
that 13,
in Amendment 13, passed in 1865, uh-huh. said neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. That's not an amendment about slavery?
But that amendment did not end slavery. So what I'm trying to tell you is the Constitution itself was already written to end slavery, and that was the agreement between the states to do that. It was only after the Supreme Court itself declared that men were property, contrary to the Constitution, that further actions needed to be taken. So it was the federal government enforcing the federal fugitive slaves laws and the federal government through the judiciary determining that men were property, which the Constitution did not establish. That was the Supreme Court. That further actions had to be taken.
So last question, Chris Ann. We had another mass school shooting this week, and a 19-year-old kid has an AR-15. What should we do about things like that?
Well, when a person, so what we're talking about now is a natural right to life, liberty, and property. When a person violates these rights by when a person violates a right by taking a life, then you punish the perpetrator. You don't stop law-abiding citizens and strip law-abiding citizens of their natural right to protect themselves. If you want to talk about implementing security measures to protect the innocent,
Chris Ann, do people, if we didn't allow Americans to own AR-15s, we'd be stripping them of their rights? You do believe that?
I do believe that. Let me ask you something. Do you think it would be okay for someone to hold to buy a hunting rifle?
I do. I do, because you could go hunting with that. You could protect your house with that. I think that's...
Do you know there is absolutely no functional difference between an AR-15 and a hunting rifle? It's all cosmetic.
I believe that is not true at all.
It is absolutely true. Go look it up. What I'm telling you is, I'm an innocent person. What did I do to those people to allow someone to take my rights away from me?
Yeah, I mean, all those people, if all those people die, it doesn't matter. That's, you have a right to own an AR-15, and what should it matter if all these kids are dying? Punish that 19-year-old kid. That'll prevent all the other kids. How about we just not allow, actually control guns a little bit? You can own handguns and you can own rifles, but we shouldn't allow a gun that can fire off that many rounds that quickly. Why is that hard, Chris Ann, for people to go along with? Why can't we own guns, have a right to own guns, but not own weapons of mass destruction? Why is that not?
But you've already said that I can own a hunting rifle, and cosmetically, the only difference is cosmetic because of the color and the frame. They shoot exactly the same. You can fire them rapidly just the same. If you want to talk about training responsible staff members in the school to protect the innocent, if you want to talk about the FBI,
so how many people do you think need to be at that school to prevent that from happening? So we're going to arm everybody to the teeth. Have 10 kids. There was an armed guard at that school, right? He didn't come in contact with the shooter, right? That's what we've heard so far. There was somebody with a gun on building. So we need more people with guns on the campus?
Here's the problem. He was already not allowed on campus.
Okay.
He was already not allowed on campus with a backpack. How many, those things technically on the basis of the school were illegal, because his being on campus and being on campus with a backpack was subject for his arrest for trespassing.
Okay.
So you make guns illegal. That's not, they've already not followed it. Not to mention the fact that the FBI was informed multiple times of this person, and they never communicated with anybody about these things. See, you cannot legitimately argue that the government or an emotional vote of the majority mob has the right to strip me, an innocent person, of my natural rights.
I'm not stripping you of any natural right. You don't have a natural right to own an AR-15. You have a right to bear arms. And if we don't regulate a little bit, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that you'll stick to this no matter what.
So now what we do is we regulate based on profiling people. Is that what we profile guns, we profile people. I get to be punished now because
you're being punished, Chris Ann, you poor thing. You gave up the AR-15. Oh, that's terrible. Are we allowed to own bazookas? Are we allowed to own a nuclear weapon? Can you have a tank and drive it around your house? Is there any limit to any of this, or should we be able to arm ourselves to no end? I mean, there should be no limit, no regulation on any of this.
So if someone runs over a child with a car, should we start outlawing?
Yes, that's the best argument in the world. Yes. Yes, ban all the cars, because cars have no other service except for to kill multiple things. What is the point of the AR-15? That's, you know, you love to make all these arguments on every little way. Oh, we're going to outlaw knives? People die by stabbing themselves every year.
So let's change the name and we'll just call them all hunting rifles, since functionally they're all the same, and
well,
then you're okay with
it. I'm sure you're wrong about that, Chrisanne, but yes, let's ban the hunting rifles, and let's ban any gun that can shoot more than that can shoot more than 10 rounds per 10 seconds or whatever it is. Let's find the medium where it makes sense for us to reduce the amount of fatalities that some lunatic can cause because we don't have strict gun control and he can get his hands on a gun. Why don't we do that?
Well, let me ask you something. If the majority of the population can determine the meaning and application of the Constitution, what then is the limit to a majority in the Constitution? Can the majority of the people, if they be all Christians, determine that you can no longer say the word Allah? Because it's dangerous and it creates people are killing people in the name of Allah. And so now, because the First Amendment says we have a right to freedom of speech, mm-hmm. but that freedom of speech doesn't include that, because the majority of the people say, you know, it's dangerous and people are killing. So now you can't say Allah. Is that too much?
Well, Chrisanne, when you show me the person that walks into a school and kills 17 people by saying Allah, then yeah, I'll support your ban on Allah. I'm all in.
Well, you know,
as soon as that happens,
you show me a gun that killed a person without someone behind it who has.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it's not the gun. It's the person. It's the person with the gun. Show me the time that somebody stabbed 17 people.
Anyone.
I know your guns
show
never have,
the,
and I'm glad. I'm glad, but
show me the knife that stabbed 17 people. Why don't you show me the pencil that made all the mistakes on my exams in college?
I just love that argument. I just love that argument that it's never about the weapon. It's never about the things people have. It's just about the people. It's just about the people. We give people a weapon and allow them to use it with no recourse. And these are going to get, you know, we're not going to regulate these. We're going to keep these laws as lax as possible because we wouldn't want to infringe on the rights of the good person to own an AR-15.
Every piece of evidence in society throughout the world proves that increased regulations on guns do not stop crimes.
Yeah, you're right. All those other countries around the world with tighter regulations that don't have these shootings are proof that we're doing it the right way.
No, you're wrong, because London, which is the population equivalent of New York City, had 2,400 gun crimes in 1 year alone, in 2016. That rose 41% from 2015. New York had, which has, believe it or not, fewer gun laws than London, had less than 1,000 gun crimes. And so laws don't stop crimes. If laws stop crimes, America would be a crime-free place, because we have way too many laws.
Chrisanne, I'm way late for the news. I appreciate the commentary and the debate tonight. I thank you for jumping on the phone. I'm 5 minutes late for the news, so I really got to go.
Well, thank you for your extra time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too. Chrisanne Hall, I know a lot of you love her. I completely disagree with her, and I think she's going to interpret the facts however she wants. I'm sure she would say the same about me. All right, 4:06 in the morning, so I'm way late. Sorry about that. This is the home of the Blackhawks, the Wildcats, and now Chicago White Sox baseball. 720 WGN Chicago. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's the news with Roger Badish. Well, Matt Bubala with you here. 720 WGN 312-981-7200. That was an interesting half hour of radio right there. That was different.
Say, Matt, have you talked to anybody interesting lately?
So Jess just was right here. I love you, Matt, because I said, Jess, let's get a constitutional expert on the air. Let's talk about the, you know, and my fault. I didn't look at her website until 2 seconds before we went on the air, and I read it and I thought, oh boy.
This is going
to
be fun.
What am I about to step into? Whew. I didn't realize that was... I just wanted somebody to step back and look at the Constitution and tell me when they wrote it. And I know we can't say exactly, here's what they were thinking. And she says you can, but other experts would say much differently about what they said at the time. Okay? And things like that. And she, I believe, is using the parts that she really wants mm-hmm. to defend freedom to the most. And that's her take on it, and I respect that. I do.
Mm.
I don't personally believe that some of the analogies, the milk analogy and things like that, it doesn't make sense. And the point is, it is 200 years later, and she says that history has proved these are inalienable rights to... I think she is, to me, she's misinterpreting some of that and just taking what she wants from it. And I'm sorry, folks. It is 200 some years later. You can say, oh, they had better technology than the government had at the time. So what? That technology was not what we have now. And I know I've got all sorts of debate on the text line over the guns and whether it's the exact same thing or not. I've got hunters saying my hunting rifle doesn't hold 30 rounds. You can't right. do what you can do with these things. And, you know, it's funny. We can talk about freedoms all you want and infringing upon your personal right. I'm sorry, but you have to have a personal right to have an AR-15. And when she's talking about we have to be able to overthrow the government, is that what we all want? We all want to be armed to have the ability to overthrow our government? Now, I understand that our government infringes on our rights all the time, and that is a problem. But do we really want to say, hey, we've got to have the most advanced weaponry possible so we can overthrow the government? Then people need tanks. People need bazookas. People need a lot. I mean, how are we ever going to overthrow the government? They have a lot more stuff than any militia or any, you know, group of people is going to have. And the government oversteps its bounds all the time. It is a big problem, but I don't think taking up arms is ever going to be the solution. And when I hear talk like that, I start worrying about Timothy McVeigh and stuff like that. And that is not where we want to go. I know that we have these rights that are put forth in the Constitution. It's a well-regulated militia. There's no regulation. That's the problem. You could say we have all these laws in the books that are enforced. We have all this and that. This kid legally got an AR-15. And you can tell me, oh, these guns are all the same. What's the difference? I don't think that's true. The AR-15 is used in every one of these shootings.
I have a question.
Yes, Roger.
So this young man and others who have gotten these rifles and gone on shooting sprees or shot other people and have used the Second Amendment to stand behind.
Well, I don't think this kid's using the Second Amendment to stand behind. But.
And follow my point here. Because a lot of people are making that argument. Oh, he had the right to have whatever he's going to have, Second Amendment, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I want to know what well-regulated militia they are a member of that gives them that right. I'm quoting the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Do you understand my point?
Yeah.
What well-regulated militia are you a member of? Are you a member of the National Guard? Do you serve? You put on the uniform 1 weekend a month to go practice maneuvers and get training and this and that, or to help out somewhere in your state where your services are needed? Are you a member of any of the armed forces? Are you currently a member of the armed forces? Or are you a retired member of the armed forces where you could still be called into service?
815 writes, so our forefathers were geniuses when it comes to the fact that we should have a free speech, but they slacked in the area that we should be able to protect ourselves from them. What he's saying to me is, okay, Matt, you probably defend free speech to death, but then, oh, but they screwed up on the Second Amendment. I want to pick and choose where I don't like what it is. And that's a valid point, sure. But I think we've had limits. What I'm saying is we've had limits. There are limits to free speech.
Yes,
there are limits to free speech. Ask Kathy Griffin.
Sure.
She posed for a picture. It was a stupid thing to do, and she shouldn't have done it, but she posed for a picture on a magazine with the decapitated head of Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she pretty much, you know, she says, got blackballed, couldn't perform mm-hmm. here. She went overseas to perform, yada, yada, yada. As somebody that screams fire in a crowded theater,
right.
There are some limits to free speech that has happened over the years. There are limits. There are rules to laws. All of these things.
There are laws on what you can say.
And my point is that the Constitution is a living, breathing document. These are guiding principles that we live by, but we also adjust adjust to our times. There have been amendments to the Constitution over the years. And I'm sorry, but there is no way the forefathers were saying, you know, someday kids are going to be shooting up schools with these things. But listen, this cannot be infringed upon. I can't imagine that they were thinking through that. They were thinking about defending their homes and about defending, about giving the people an opportunity to fight back against government. I would imagine they just fought off the British. They just established their own. And they thought, you know what? We cannot allow our people ever to be overtaken by their government. It should be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Now, is it still that? Yeah, you could argue it's not, because the government could overtake us all at any time, right? We can't truly fight back against the government. Should we arm ourselves more so we can? I don't think so. I think we have representatives, and the process works pretty good. And yes, they're overstepping their bounds probably all the time, and there's lawsuits and investigations to try to fight back at that. The way to fight back at it is not with a gun, right? It's with elections and the vote and all of those things.
I have another concern. There are calls amongst, take a breath, thank you. There are calls amongst many solutions to this problem. Of arming additional people in the school. Here's my fear. You start having gun battles in the school. Mm-hmm. Now you have more people caught in the crossfire.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Roger, I totally understand your argument on that. I would say if I was going to play devil's advocate, I would have rather had somebody there with a gun when this kid's walking through. And we would have. We would have hoped that somebody could prevent even one more death. Now, maybe you're right. Maybe somebody gets caught in the crossfire then and dies. Maybe it gets worse. But I think we would take that chance. If some kid's walking in with an AR-15, yes, mm-hmm. I would rather there be somebody there to try to stop him.
I understand,
of course. And there was, from reports I've heard, somebody with a gun on campus,
but
that couldn't get to him.
Right.
And we're not going to have 5 or 10 people on every campus. And, you know, as our guest said, listen, there were warnings to the FBI. He wasn't allowed on campus with a backpack. There were all these things in place. But if somebody has an AR-15 and takes an Uber there, until you get to him, until you know he's there, until these things, I mean, we can have right. all the laws we want against that kid, against him being on campus, have people on campus, but unless somebody is there to meet him as he walks in with an AR-15, he needs a couple of minutes, and then all the damage is done.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes. Yeah. All right, we're going to move away from this because we had a guest lined up. I apologize. A lot of people are calling, asking questions. You guys are texting like crazy. And I appreciate it all. We will try to jump back to this next week. This hopefully isn't going away, because that's our cycle right now here in the U.S. Shooting, outrage goes away. We wait for it to happen again. We'll try to talk about this again next week. And I respect her opinions. Those are her opinions. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking for is just a constitutional law expert, not to say we got to get rid of all guns, not to say you got to have all guns, mm-hmm. to just look at it and say, hey, here's the Constitution. Here's what was written. Here's what is truly believed. I'm trying to find, and I know it's impossible these days, the unpartisan view on the Constitution, and are changes possible? Is it too limiting of rights? I'm sorry. I'm on the side of I believe in your right to bear arms. I do. And to own a gun to protect your home. I don't love the idea of you owning a gun to overthrow the government, because that's just not possible these days. And I don't want us to be at a point where somebody thinks they have to overthrow the government. But I think that it should be limited. Hunting, protecting your home, protecting your personal self. AR-15, I'm sorry. We had an assault rifle ban at one time. Why can't we have that now? And don't give me, you can make it in parts. There's a black market then. Of course. So what, this is America where we just say, it's too hard. We can't do it. It wouldn't work. Please. We put a man on the moon. Okay, moving along. Robert Bartholomew is our old friend from overseas who studies mass paranoia. What an interesting way for me to jump into him as I sound myself like I need to be put in a room with some tinfoil on my head. Robert, how are you this morning?
Good, good.
I don't know if you've been listening in on the craziness that's been happening here at all, but I just decided at 4 a.m. to open up a debate on gun laws here in the United States. And it was very interesting, as you could expect. How are you doing, sir?
Good. You know, you had me on a few months ago, and I talked about my study on the claims of a sonic attack on U.S. embassy personnel in Cuba.
Right.
And now the big study's come out. It just came out on the 15th of February. A major major study on this attack.
I didn't even know that. You know, I don't know if you know, Robert, because I know you're in New Zealand. There's been a lot going on in the United States, and it's not just all the Olympics. So I think that kind of got...
Well, we have shopping malls down here. We also have TV, and I do get the American news every morning. And, yeah, it's very sad and tragic what's happened there. And I can tell you, New Zealanders are, they just shake their heads. And why is it only happening in the U.S. to this extent? And I personally think there needs to be what you were saying, that I don't think people need automatic weapons or a machine gun to protect themselves. But anyway, I don't want to get off onto that tangent.
Sure. So what I was saying, though, is that I think that, you know, this was that sonic attack story was big in August or whenever it happened. And I talked to you a couple times about this, and you explained instances of mass paranoia, and it was fascinating. And so you said the report finally came out. I didn't see anything about that online or in the paper. I think just with so much going on here right now that really got buried on page 10, and I didn't see it. So what did the report say?
Well, this is a major study. Now, before I tell you the findings, the quick backdrop to the story: between late 2016 and November of 2017, 24 staff working at the U.S. Embassy in Havana, Cuba, reported falling ill after hearing a mysterious high-pitched whining sound. Several Canadian embassy personnel also fell ill under similar circumstances. Donald Trump has come out and said that he believes the Cubans were involved. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has expressed a similar view. There's a widespread belief that some type of sonic acoustical weapon was used. The symptoms were headaches, dizziness, nausea, fatigue, memory problems, difficulty sleeping, ringing in the ears, confusion, vertigo, hearing loss, concussion-like symptoms, and changes to the white matter tracts of the brain. And so just a couple of days ago, on February 15th of this year, a group of doctors at Penn State University published a study which found that of the 21 patients they examined from the Cuban attacks, all had strange concussion-like symptoms that were caused by exposure to some unknown energy force. Now, this wasn't any journal. This was one of the top medical journals in the world, the Journal of the American Medical Association. When I read the report, I could not believe what I was reading. Now, I said before I thought mass psychogenic illness was involved, and I staked my career on that. I read the article. I was stunned. For the past several months, there have been leaks to the media about strange concussion-like symptoms, about white matter tract changes in the brain, and that is what they found. I have been a social scientist for 30 years. When I first scanned the paper, and it got 20,000 hits from doctors very quickly, within 24, 48 hours. When I first scanned the paper, I said to myself, wow, I mean, they found all this. Then I looked at the data, and it's not there. This study makes sensational claims that are not supported by their own data. People have to be careful. I went out and I said, this is what I think it is. It's mass psychogenic illness. And people, scientists, have to be objective, and you have to be willing to be self-critical and say, you know what? I was wrong. But in this case, not only is their data not supporting their case, they made mistakes that you wouldn't make in a high school research paper. It reads like a propaganda paper put out by the U.S. government. It's unbelievable. I could not believe it. Now, I give the Journal of the American Medical Association credit, because what they did was they published this article because it's such a high-profile case with international implications. Then they published an editorial and a third paper, a commentary, which were both critical of the study. One of the people writing the editorial was Christopher Muth. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Neurological Sciences at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. I would suggest you interview him as well. He was very cautious. Now, my area of expertise is mass psychogenic illness, mass hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, it can't be mass psychogenic illness, because all of the patients were keen to return to work, and hence they were not malingering. Now, malingering refers to the faking of illness or injury to get out of work or some kind of responsibility. Malingering has nothing to do with this case. There's no debate about this. If we had 1,000 psychiatrists in a room, they would all agree with me. It's the wrong term. This shows an alarming lack of understanding on the literature on mass hysteria. I cannot believe that this actually happened. Then they said another reason why it can't be psychogenic illness is because there's no rapid onset and recovery. This has been dragged out over months. They also got that wrong. The second most common type of mass psychogenic illness begins slowly and persists for months or years and is often characterized by neurological symptoms. What do we have in this case? Neurological symptoms. Again, they are flat out wrong. There's no misunderstanding here. This is not open to debate or interpretation. They're just wrong. Now, if they're wrong on that, what else are they wrong on? Then one of the doctors says in an interview after publishing the study, some of the people didn't know others who had fallen ill, so it's not mass psychogenic illness. So why didn't they put that in the study? What he said was that some patients didn't know other patients had fallen ill. It would be silly to me not to put that in, but they left it out. Now, my question is, was it one or was it 21? They're not saying. And then we're told that in the study, the average patient had to wait 203 days after the first symptoms appeared before they were interviewed and they were treated for their symptoms. My goodness, that's a massive amount of time. After such a long period of time, memories become distorted. Timelines become foggy. Maybe that's why they didn't put it in their article. These are glaring oversights, and quite frankly, it's hard to believe. I mean, it shows a stunning lack of understanding on the literature on mass psychogenic illness, mass hysteria. And I'll tell you, the editorials were quite scathing and very critical of the study itself. So what's happened here is, and, you know, as a former, I began as a radio journalist, I'm seeing several newspapers now reporting on the JAMA article in a way that makes it sound like it's a big mystery without citing the two very cautious and critical commentaries that accompany the article. Now, it's not exactly fake news, but I would refer to that as shoddy journalism. And, I mean, it's just remarkable the degree of vagueness of this study and the claims that they were making, that they just couldn't support the claims. And I'll tell you this, like, I published 70 articles in scientific journals over the last 30 years. I am a respected scientist. I'm not letting my emotions get carried away here. If I'm wrong, I would be the first to admit it and say, you know what, they've got the data, there's some kind of sonic attack going on. I was just shocked by the vague nature of this study. And you'll remember before when I was on, I mentioned that they reported white matter track changes. And
yeah, that was, I think, the last time we talked, that was what had been leaked out about white matter changes. Yeah.
Look, there's no baseline evaluation here to compare with.
Right.
There's no control group. And this is relevant because, as they said in the editorial, many of the symptoms and signs that were reported occur in the general population. I mean, and so there's no evidence. There's never been any evidence in the scientific literature that sound waves can cause concussions or white matter tract changes. White matter tract changes are common in an array of conditions, from dementia to Alzheimer's to depression to normal aging. It's very common. And when they looked at the concussion-like symptoms, they had one expert on there who was saying that these could be explained by other factors. He said that the neuroimaging data from most of the cohort appear to be normal or to have non-specific findings. Now, that was S. Andrew Josephson, the head of neurology at the University of California, San Francisco Medical School. Now, it's just remarkable how this study came out. But again, I give the Journal of the American Medical Association credit. They put it out because it's such a high-profile case with so many implications. And they really beat it up in the editorial, and they beat it up in the commentary. And, you know, there's a reason why they published an editorial and a separate commentary on there.
Well, Robert, I imagine that's not necessarily is that in line? I imagine there's been controversial findings there before. Have they ever had an editorial before to say, hey, we put this out because this was a study that was done. However, we have concerns, we have questions about it?
Sure. I mean, that does happen in the scientific literature. And, you know, this is the way science works, through peer review and to put your data out there and to examine the data. But the claims they were making, I mean, they started out saying things like, you know, this is a study of these energy waves that affected people in Cuba. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's a study of the possibility of energy waves that affected people. They started out not being very objective at the very beginning. A colleague said to me when they read the article that it almost looked like it was done by the U.S. propaganda office or something. I mean, it was just remarkable how vague and nonspecific they could be. And of course, they can also hide behind the there's certain information we can't tell you because it's in the national interest.
Well, let me ask you, Robert, I'm really late for the news, so I got to let you go after this, but I do want to have you back on soon to get more into this. But what is your take on that? You said, you know, it looks like this was put out by a propaganda office. Do we think maybe the government had some sway over this and wants to put some pressure on Cuba or to keep the, you know, keep Cuba at arm's length and sow in the general public a little discord with Cuba because it got opened up and now there have been questions about whether we're going to keep diplomatic ties as open to Cuba? What's your take on it? Do you think that there was some government intervention here?
You know, I don't think so, but scientists are human beings, and they're looking at this cohort, and they're looking to you see what you expect to see. But X-rays, images of the brain are open to interpretation. That's why you get second and third opinions. That's why you get editorials and commentaries. So what we have here is a situation where this is being reported as one thing, but it really isn't. The last time I was on, I gave a caveat, and I'm going to give it again. And I can sum up this case in one sentence. When you hear the sounds of hoofbeats in the night, first think horses, not zebras. These people were seeing unicorns. They were expecting to see them. And, you know, science, the wheels of science turn slowly, but they turn, and you have to have the supporting evidence. They don't. I say what I've said before, that mass psychogenic illness is the most likely explanation for this case. When you knock out the white matter tract changes, which in the concussion-like symptoms, which don't hold water, there's not clear evidence for those. All the other symptoms are classic for mass psychogenic illness. I think this is a case of mass hysteria.
Robert Bartholomew is in, you're in Auckland, New Zealand, right, Robert? That's where we're
Auckland,
talking
New Zealand,
Auckland,
yep.
New Zealand. We will talk again. It's fascinating, and I wish I had more time for it now. I apologize. I was running late on the other thing, and now I'm late for the news. But thank you for jumping on the phone and talk. You know, as you first started explaining, I thought, holy cow, Robert's going to say, I was wrong. There's something that does it. But there was an interesting twist yet again. We'll talk more about it soon, okay?
Okay, have a good night.
Thank you so much for jumping on. Robert Bartholomew, we've talked to him, you know, that's like our fourth time now talking about this case.
Yeah, I remember.
And just fascinating that it keeps taking twists. And you got to wonder, what happened? If the science here isn't so good, why are they? Maybe they're just keeping it open, saying, "Hey, we can't explain this, and so we want to keep open the possibility of, you know, looking more into it." But
or maybe they're hoping it'll go away.
Well, it's not going to go away if you keep saying this could have, you know, that's not making it go away, saying, you know, it was mass hysteria. It was just kind of one of these things. This happens from time to time. To me, that makes it go away. If something happened and they don't want people to know something happened, you say mass hysteria. But why are they keeping open the idea that there was an attack by Cuba? That to me is kind of interesting. Okay, really late for the news. Apologize to everybody. Let's get upstairs. Hello, everybody. Okay, well, it's been an interesting show. We're a little bit behind on spot, so we're going to play some here, get caught up a little bit before we say good morning to the morning show. And I will also read to you some of the mean texts that you sent while we talked to Chris Ann Hall earlier tonight. We had a lot on both sides, but of course, you guys gave me some slick burns, so I'll give you your proper credit coming up, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Thanks for being with us this week. We'll be back at 2 a.m. next week. You can follow us on Facebook at The Matt Bubala Show on Facebook, at Matt Bubala on Twitter. Give us a like there. Some of the, and I appreciate all the impassioned responses from all of you tonight, those that were that were agreeing with me and those that were very much against me. 608 wrote, take a national vote on owning automatic weapons. 417 says, the debate has ended. You are now on your own soapbox, so close-minded. Shut up already! Tell us when you'll continue this conversation, and I'll tune you out as you did your guest. I'm sorry, I'm imagining how they sounded as they typed. 815 says, the only solution to your problem, Matt, is to gather enough people like you to amend the Constitution. However, I think you'll find that neither Democratic nor Republican support for your opinion is enough to make that change. Well, I disagree. We don't need to amend the Constitution. We need to pass some laws restricting some guns. We had an assault rifle ban. That wasn't an amendment to the Constitution. We don't have to amend the Constitution. We need to pass some laws, maybe a law like outlawing any gun that can release more than one bullet every so often. I don't know. Smarter people than me would have to come up with it. But there's something that could be done to make sure that people don't end up in position to kill people as quickly as they do with guns. Now, yes, they could still drive a van into an area and kill people. They could still do all sorts of things. We are making it very easy for people to kill mass amounts of people. I'm sorry. A couple more. 815 says, perhaps your First Amendment rights should be limited to pen and paper or the printing press if you were going to compare past technology. So you ban the AR-15, next you ban AK-47 because that's the next gun someone uses. So what's the next gun after that? Don't you see it's a slippery slope, and that's why everybody's so afraid of banning it? And 630, you hit the nail on the head. That is, I think, really the issue here. The NRA does not want to allow us to ban anything because they fear a slippery slope. And I understand that. That is, and quite honestly, I think that's the same way if we want to jump over to an argument somebody tried to throw at me on Facebook today, the abortion argument. People that believe in the freedom of choice do not want any limits on it because they think it's a slippery slope, right? And so everybody fights that game. And that is a tough part of that argument. I understand that you think that, well, if you ban this, the next thing you know, well, we don't have that, we don't have this. And next thing you know, our Second Amendment right truly is being infringed upon. It's a danger of it, but I think it's one we got to tackle. We got the morning show coming up in a few minutes here on 720 WGN. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you. We'll be back at 2 a.m. next Saturday morning with Raj and Jesh. Jesh or Jess. You can follow us on Facebook at The Matt Bubala Show on Facebook and like us on Twitter at Matt Bubala. Or follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, whichever way you want. One thing that we know that we like, it's every Saturday morning when we get to say good morning to our good friend, Orion Samuelson.